From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where a debate is brewing in city classrooms on whether to keep funding police officers in schools. And that conversation is coming to a head thanks to a recently passed police reform bill. GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse has more on this. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Arun.
So walk us through how this statewide police reform bill addresses police officers in schools.
So these are big changes. The new reform bill that the governor signed into law in December eliminates the power of departments to license special officers. That includes the 63 Boston School Police who work in the public schools. Under the new law, they must be certified by the state's Peace Officer Standards and Training Commission. That's a new commission under the law as well. And that commission has 9 members appointed by the governor and state attorney general. The new law also lifts a requirement that districts have at least one school resource officer, or SRO. That's another term for school police.
Now, we hear in your reporting there are strong feelings on both sides of this issue. So talk us through that. First, tell us about people who are opposed, who are against the SROs. Why do they say that? Why do they think they aren't necessary?
Well, they say it creates a police atmosphere in the schools. The uniforms and knowing that school police have the power to arrest you. Boston school police aren't armed, but metal detectors at the entrances of some schools don't help with that atmosphere. Anyway, studies, research have also shown that that environment leads to more arrests of students, particularly students of color, and often for minor offenses. Offenses that might get a white student suspended or sent to the principal's office in another district, that wouldn't happen in some of these more heavily policed schools. Researchers have known about these inequities for a long time, and they call it the school-to-prison pipeline. It's something that predates the death of George Floyd, but Floyd's death has mobilized Black Lives Matter, the Boston Teachers Union, and other groups across the country that have called for defunding police. They're pushing harder for these changes. I have to tell you, what's so interesting to me is that the change has been driven, you know, in large part by cell phone videos, like the horrific video of Floyd's murder. There's plenty of footage out there from different parts of the U.S. where school police officers are body slamming and punching students of color in school hallways. The videos are so disturbing, and they're all over social media, captured by students. It's become harder for police to justify this treatment of students.
Right. And I have to imagine, though, the people on the other side of this, they're probably also saying they want to keep students safe. They're both after the same thing, right, even though they're on opposite sides.
Yes, right. Ironic. The justification is SROs must protect kids. We must protect kids. But that means all kids. What's happened is that officers have brought their own biases, some unconscious, to policing. Even school police advocates say better training and hiring is needed to work with the student population. Behavior of Black and brown children has been disproportionately criminalized. Research shows that clearly. So what we're seeing is a school-to-prison pipeline, and people are speaking out. Reforms are underway because communities of color have had enough. Many cities have removed police from schools altogether. That's underway in Worcester, Denver, Seattle, Minneapolis, Chicago. There's a growing list of cities that have said either, you know, no to police in schools or reduced their ranks. Here in Boston, just an interesting fact here, some high schools have not one, but 2 school police officers.
Also here in Boston, we have a mayoral race underway, and policing and criminal justice are huge issues. They just had a debate that was held at a correction facility. Can you give us a sense of where the candidates fall on this topic, though, about policing in schools?
That's right. 4 of the 6 most visible mayoral candidates said in a debate earlier this year that they were in favor of removing police from schools. Acting Mayor Kim Janey's position isn't exactly clear on this, and she wasn't at that debate. With the level of power the mayor in Boston has over the school committee and the schools, this is going to be an important issue going forward.
Well, Meg, thanks for the reporting on this. We'll be watching this going forward. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
That's GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse. Before I go, I should tell you what else is up. More than half of Massachusetts residents are now fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That's 3.52 million people and counting. Boston University School of Public Health Dean Dr. Sandro Galea sees this as an important milestone.
I think it's really an important step towards us being at a place where the pandemic slows down substantially, allowing us a much faster return to the next normal.
News of this vaccination milestone comes just as the state prepares to drop virtually all remaining pandemic restrictions on Saturday. And speaking of, the holiday weekend is almost upon us, but with higher vaccine rates, there is one pesky downside to consider. Traffic on the highway this weekend is expected to be a lot heavier than we've seen for some time. Mary McGuire with AAA Northeast says nationwide, some 37 million people will hit the roads, up 60% from last year.
We are projecting at AAA that more than 900,000 Bay State residents will travel for the Memorial Holiday weekend. And of that total of 900,000, 842,000 people tell us they will get behind the wheel. They'll travel by car.
McGuire says that number is close to the number of people who traveled by car in Massachusetts for Memorial Day in 2019. Yeesh. And finally, who remembers, or who doesn't remember, a children's book by the name of The Very Hungry Caterpillar? Here's an excerpt to jog your memory. On Monday, he ate through one apple, but he was still hungry. On Tuesday, he ate through two pears, but he was still hungry. On what? You get the idea. That's Eric Carl from Western Mass, beloved author of this children's book and others. He died last weekend in Northampton at age 91. Here's his son, Rolf Carl.
He intentionally wanted to be positive and show joy in his work, something that he recently, we were looking at his body of work in his studio, lots of different things he's done over time. And he looks at it and he kind of closes his mouth and he seriously says, not bad.
Not bad at all, Eric. It's beautiful work. It feels kind of perfect to be reflecting back on this story right now. The pandemic isn't over, but things are transforming here in Massachusetts, just like they did for the Very Hungry Caterpillar, who built a small house called a cocoon around himself. He stayed inside for more than 2 weeks. Then he nibbled a hole in the cocoon, pushed his way out, and he was a beautiful butterfly. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since springtime and transformation, I'm Arun Roth. We'll talk tomorrow. You like podcasts. Here's one more you might enjoy. All Revved Up. Join hosts and reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price as they explore the intersection of faith, politics, and culture. New episodes of All Revved Up drop every other Wednesday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.